Kraken.
Welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I am your host, Jessica Concepcion. I am here to bring you tons of information that's just going to blow your mind in regards to what you can do and your culture at work, your organization, wherever you are, in regards to being a change in the anti-trafficking industry. What is anti-trafficking? Anti-trafficking is basically going against human trafficking in the 21st century. Come on, folks, be about it. We have so much work to do because one is being educated, but then two, it's making a difference. So I believe this podcast is going to be relevant to your life, relevant to your purpose, wherever you are, whether you're a business coach or you're a businessman or a teacher, a principal at a school, a politician, whoever you are, you have a role to play in the anti-trafficking field. And I believe that having the knowledge makes an impact and it stirs our hearts to make a difference. So I encourage you to keep listening, tune in. If you haven't checked out the last episodes, please do so. They are filled with tons of information. And I definitely spent some time researching in order to be able to bring you content that is relevant to today, not 50 years ago, but it's happening, things that are happening today in today's world. And this September, I really wanted to talk about the back to school season. There's teachers that are going back to school, right? We're getting out of summertime and students have been getting ready every Monday to just go back to school and start this new school year. So I wanted to bring fresh content in regards to what teachers can look for when they're in their classrooms, when they're interacting with their students, when they're loving on their students and being kind to them and teaching them and creating lessons for them. Teachers do so much to pour into their classrooms, and I want to honor that. You know, as a teacher, you are filling in a big space in society. You know, I think sometimes we underestimate the influence that teachers have in the classrooms, but I think during COVID, a lot of the parents understood. Once the children were home, they look back now and really realize, you know, the impact that and the big difference that teachers have on their kids, and that it's not easy being a teacher. You know, it's not easy being a teacher. You have to manage 20 plus students normally, and you're on a timer. You know, every single day you have to bring in some content, information, educate your classroom, and create a space where students hopefully want to be in. And a lot of times with the different types of personalities, nationalities, or ethnicities that are in a classroom, there arises certain problems, such as when a child or a student might give like a little outburst, might be a little labeled a troubled child, someone who has a hard time being still in the classroom, being obedient to the rules. And for those students, it can be challenging to learn. It can be challenging for them to sit still and pay attention. It can be challenging them to share with other students, for example, or work in a group setting. So a lot of times when a child is not having the proper behavior in school, sometimes they're labeled, and sometimes, you know, they're kind of put in timeout or kicked out of the class or told, hey, like, I need to talk to your mom about this or your dad. And many times we don't know how to respond properly to a child who's being defiant or giving us attitude. And that can be in any setting. It doesn't have to necessarily be a teacher. It could be, you know, if you're a doctor and you have a child that's being rude or upsetting, or if you're in the grocery store and you run into a teenager or someone, you know, a minor who is causing some mayhem around you, you know, you might leave quickly, or, you know, you might kind of give them a stare and think to yourself, like, where are your parents? Or you might consider that there's something going on in this child's life that is affecting them and causing them to kind of act out. So I wanted to hone in specifically on teachers in the setting that you're in with the students, because as a teacher, you're with the kids for so much time and you're able to see things in them, you know, you're able to pull out their potential. You're able to pull out what others can't see. And I remember when I was in class growing up, at the end of the year, some of my teachers would write in my yearbook, and some of them said, I remember one of my teachers, he wrote something about my smile and that my smile could light up a room. And I just remember hearing that, or like reading that feedback, and it was such a warming, like a heartwarming content. It made me feel nice. Like, it made me feel really special because he complimented me, you know. He was like, wow, like, you know, you have a personality, or, you know, your smile lights up a room. And I was like, oh, thank you, you know, that was so nice. And another one of my teachers, I remember in eighth grade, wrote in my yearbook, and she just told me something like, don't change, don't ever change. And I was like, oh, like, that's so sweet, you know. And the fact that I can remember that to this day, and this is like 20 years later, says a lot about when you're that young, when you're growing up and you're in elementary school or middle school or high school, and you're getting that type of feedback from your teachers. And it's just one sentence, you know, it wasn't even like a paragraph, or it was a paragraph kind of, but it wasn't even like a page long. It was just two sentences, and they're very kind words that affirmed me as a person. And and I bring that up because it's so crazy that I can still remember feeling warm, you know, because of that, you know, and feeling affirmed, and, you know, just lifted. My spirit was lifted, right? And so as a teacher, you have so much influence on your students. They see you as an authority figure in their life. And I know for some teachers that have very challenging students, whether it's an attitude or, you know, in academics, they might be falling behind, whatever it is, they still see you as someone that you're someone in their life, you know, that you have the opportunity to impact them. And I don't think students and children don't always express their feelings. They can't acknowledge what's happening sometimes to them, to others. And I think knowing how children can be can help us to make a little bit more effort when we're around children and students. So I wanted to say that to really emphasize that your presence makes a difference. And I know you have a work to do. Every day you get up, you have a job. You have a job to get done. These lesson plans will not plan themselves. And I know how stressful that could probably be, you know, thinking about your life, thinking about everything you have to do. not only for your students, but also just to organize the day for them. And so on top of that, here comes Jessica, the host, telling you, hey, there's some more signs and some more things that you can look out for when you're facilitating your classrooms. All right, I know not every teacher wears their heart on their sleeve, and I'm not asking you to change your personality or to become someone else, but I think with enough knowledge, more people are able to make a difference in the life of a child, whether it's by having a conversation with them, whether it's by informing the right people. If you do discover that this child is involved in activities that they shouldn't be in, and we're gonna dive into that, but you have the ability to make an impact. And that it doesn't matter how long you've been teaching, whether it's been a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, it doesn't matter how long you've been in the classroom. Every single person has the ability to continuously make an impact on so many kids' lives. So in this season of back to school, I just wanted to bring you some tips and tricks and information on how you can impact your students even more, and how to pay attention to the red flags that somebody in your class might be being trafficked at home. So human trafficking is one of the largest growing industries, criminal industries in the world. And in America, the primary way that people are trafficked is, well, specifically in the commercial sex industry, is through someone they know. So most of the time, children are not being kidnapped and taken into another country or anything like that within the US. But normally the way it works here is through a relationship. So normally this child, whether it's their family who's trafficking them, or it is a boyfriend or girlfriend that they know, normally that relationship becomes toxic, and that person that they know begins to sell them to buyers in the commercial sex industry. So it happens really slowly. They develop, normally the pimps or traffickers, you can call them, develop a personal relationship with the children. And I'm telling you, it can be anyone. It could, but in America, it's specifically boyfriends, normally, or quote unquote boyfriends, because the trafficker sets out to establish a relationship with a minor. They're not normally really trying to be in a relationship with this person. They just want to they initiate this relationship specifically to traffic this individual or this minor. And so it's important to realize that it's very messy. Most of the children who are trafficked in our schools, in our country, are unaware that they're being trafficked. They don't understand the concept of being a victim of human trafficking. And now there is more information now about this topic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that children understand what's happening to them. So let me just paint you a story. Let's say there is a girl named Susie, and she's at the mall with her friends. This girl barely goes out. She's typically always at home, you know, and today is a special day. She finally gets out with her friends. They're gonna go shopping, and she runs into an older guy who's just a little few years older than her. Maybe like she's 11 years old and he might be 20 years old, let's say, but he looks younger. And he approaches her group of friends and kind of singles her out and says, "Oh, wow, you're really pretty." And she's like, "Oh, who, me? And kind of looks down at her feet and is kind of shy and can't believe that somebody like him would be talking to her. And he, at that moment, kind of says to himself, maybe this, you know, she could be one of the girls I can get, that I can start trafficking. But I need to make sure that I gain her trust first. So let me try to see if I can get closer to her. And so at that moment, he might ask for her number, her Instagram handle, whatever it is, for Facebook, and kind of, you know, initiate a relationship of interest so that he's pursuing her as a boyfriend would. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And of course, he's going to be like, oh, you know, definitely don't tell your parents. You know, I'm a little, or he might lie about his age. Maybe he says, oh, I'm 16. I go to this high school, and makes up, you know, whatever high school he goes to. And so she doesn't think anything. She doesn't have any red flags or anything like that. All of a sudden, he's like, oh, do you want to go to the movies? Do you want to go do this? I'll pick you up in my car, blah, blah, blah. And so he's obviously investing in her time, energy, words of affirmation just through text message or maybe liking her posts. And this is a girl. She's 11 years old. She doesn't really go out the house much. She's young. And she's thinking to herself, wow, I'm really lucky. I have this guy. He's really cute and he's interested in me. And I only share this story because this actually happens. This is how human trafficking happens in America. And there are stories specifically of people being trafficked in this way, just literally walking up to someone in the mall and trying to see if they're the type, you know, the guys will try to see if they're kind of shy, not really confident in themselves, the girls. And if they see that they're not confident, they're like, oh, I got her, or I can potentially get her. And so what happens next is normally they will be in quote unquote a relationship. They're talking, or he's buying her gifts and all these things. And typically it becomes a love affair, right? They're in love, and or she's in love, and he'll say things like, you're so special. And another thing that they do is they try to find out information about the girl, of her childhood, of her family relationships. They try to see if there's anything that they can use against her for the future, maybe as blackmail or anything like that. So they try to really get to know this person in order to see if there's any vulnerabilities that they can exploit. So that conversation might be like, oh, like, how's your, like, what's your father like, or what's your mom like, or what's your siblings? They try to find out everything they can about this person, and they take note, and they seem very interested. But at the end of the day, they have an agenda, and it's not a good one. It's to exploit these children. It's to eventually get them to sell themselves, and or get them to do a favor for them, right? So normally the conversation will turn, right, after like, let's say, 8 months of dating, quote unquote. They might say, hey, you know, I'm really low on funds right now, you know, I was wondering if you could do this favor for me, and in exchange they're gonna be paying you. So basically, like, you know, I don't know how I don't know necessarily if, you know, he'll initiate like a physical relationship with her. Most likely that happens. And then he's like, well, can you sleep with my friend, and that'll help me out, because he's willing to pay and everything. And so it's a very slimy, vile trick that these people are doing to the younger folk. And it's very disheartening, because imagine being in the shoes of this 11-year-old who thought she was in love, but now it's a very complicated relationship. It's a very intimate relationship, and now he's bringing other people into it as well. And as a person that's 11 years old who may have not experienced anything like this, you remember this person is new to life, you know, they went to the mall one day and they ran into this guy and he became, you know, a walking dreamboat of a person. And now she's like 8 months in. So what kind of red flags might we pay attention to in this girl's life? And some of the red flags, for example, as a teacher that you might notice is unexplained absences or not attending school regularly. So maybe in the beginning of the year she was attending classes, she was getting, you know, A's on her tests, she was turning in her homework, but then all of a sudden she's not showing up for class or she's ditching school. She has all these unexplained absences, like her parents kind of don't have a understanding of where she's been, but they're just, you know, they themselves have no idea what's happening. They just kind of assume, well, she's going through her rebellious stage, she has a boyfriend, or maybe they don't know about the boyfriend, but maybe she hasn't told them what she's been doing. She's been being trafficked and or being sold for sex, you know, and she's embarrassed about it. There's a shameful aspect to it. Sometimes the boyfriend might record and be like, well, if you don't continue, I'm gonna blackmail you. And then they'll also be sweet. So there's a lot of testimonies on YouTube that you can look up in regards to being trafficked. And there's a lot of aspects of the abuse that goes in and out of sweetness. So like the boyfriend would be really sweet one day and then the next day like abusive and calling them names and just saying, you know, exploiting their vulnerabilities, whatever they shared with that trafficker in the beginning of their relationship. The trafficker will bring it against them and say things like, well, that's why no one loves you, or I'm the only one that will ever love you because, like you said, you told me that you felt alone when you were little, or this happened when you were little, and so you'll never be loved. And, you know, just lies that they really construct to keep someone locked in a situation that they don't see the solution out. And so unexplained absences, frequent runaways from home. So that kind of ties into not being at school. And then another red flag is if the child is referencing a lot of traveling. So they might be traveling to different, the pimp might be taking them out of the county to different cities, and they might be going into different hotels and everything like that. So if the child references a lot of travel, like, oh, a lot of plane travel or road trips, or, you know, I was in this city and then the next time I was in this city, you know, it's really, that's a point of, if you ever overhear a conversation happening like that, it's a good time to ask if that's happening with family. Are you going on vacation? What is it that you're doing? Or, you know, kind of like leaning in and being like, oh, that's interesting, like, is that happening, you know, like, what, when's your next trip? And, you know, and then being able to have a relationship hopefully with the parent. And as a teacher, you can kind of bring in some information to the parent and say, hey, like, are you guys going to Las Vegas next week? You know, I heard Emily saying that you're going to Las Vegas, and having that conversation in order to see, you know, to kind of dig deeper into it and not just let it go. Because I think a lot of times, as you know, when our lives are so busy with our own things and our own goals, especially in class, that you have to do, it's very easy to kind of not, it's kind of easy to miss opportunities to kind of dig deeper, put your Sherlock Holmes hat on and kind of say, hey, like, that doesn't sound right, you know? Why is this 11-year-old talking about going to Las Vegas or New York? Or I mean, some people, that's the lifestyle they have, right? Their family might travel a lot and they might be in the military, whatever it is. But if it doesn't sound right, then trust your gut and try to dig a little deeper and in a way that connects with the student and not isolates the student more, because that's a part of it too. Being able to build a relationship with kids who seem to be in a challenging, who seem to have a challenging home life, because then you become a person that they can trust when they are ready to come out and say what they've been going through. And most of the time, as I was saying before, we see children who are going through things as problems in the classroom, but sometimes there are things happening to these children, not really that they're asking for. It's just, it's something that's happening. And a lot of children go through abuse and neglect that are not exposed early enough. You know, they kind of go through it their whole childhood, and then, you know, they deal with the after effects in their adulthood. So it's important as a teacher to be able to lean into moments and find that trust and become that person, that a trustable adult, that your students will want to tell you what's happening, even if it's challenging. Because I feel that if someone is being trafficked at 11 years old, they're not going to be able to verbalize, "I'm being trafficked," unless they know what trafficking is. But most of the time, they don't understand that they are a victim and that they were never in a real relationship. That relationship's completely false and they were completely used. So as a human being, and you're 11 years old, it might be hard. Your brain doesn't develop completely in the critical thinking sphere until you're like 25. So at 11-year-old, you're just feel through your emotion what feels good and what's, you know, like, right now. And we need adults at that age to be able to kind of gear us in the right direction, give us information about the world and life. And even though at that age we act like we know everything and we're so confident, they're not. they don't know everything. They need direction. And I would encourage teachers not to be afraid to have these deeper or harder conversations in a professional manner. And that's why it doesn't matter what your personality is, whether you're cool or uncool, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a cool teacher or you're not a cool teacher, whatever it is, like, you have the ability to build relationships with students that may impact them for the rest of their life. And you have the responsibility as well, I think. You know, there's this Bible verse in, I can pull it up right here, in Matthew, in the New Testament, and it's the parable of the bag of gold. So it's basically about there's a guy who's going on a trip, and he leaves his gold, or like these bags of talents, what they call in the old days, a talent, to three other people, so what they call servants. So he entrusts five bags to one guy, two bags to another, and then one bag to a third guy. And so I was actually like on the elliptical earlier today, and I was thinking about this parable of the talents and how it represents like when God entrusts people with different gifts or different responsibilities. And when I closed my eyes on the elliptical, I kind of imagined this business owner smiling and excitingly giving these bags of gold or these talents to each person. And kind of like, you know, if it's representing God, you know, and how he entrusts us in this life with certain responsibilities, I kind of see it as like he's excitingly giving it to us, right? Like he gives us purposes on earth, whether it's you're a teacher, a firefighter, a police officer, a politician, a lawyer, a submarine guy, like you're driving submarines or something. You're entrusted with a responsibility. And he, in the parable specifically, there's one guy who doesn't do anything with what he's been given. He basically sits on it and doesn't multiply. He puts the money in, like, he buries it. And when I was thinking about this, I just picture him as a guy kind of just lazy, you know, like someone who doesn't want to like kind of work and put a little bit extra effort. He's kind of just like kind of scared in a way. Like he's like, oh man, like I have this responsibility of protecting this other guy's money. What am I supposed to do with it? And I think I'm just gonna bury it. And that way, you know, I don't have to be responsible for if I lose it. I'm just, you know, I kept it safe and it is what it is, you know. And then I kind of like when I was closing my eyes, like envisioning this parable, I kind of see him as a guy who kind of is like, all right, well, time to like have fun and just do what I got to do. Like, I'm not going to put it to work or anything. I'm just going to leave it there. And I only say this because I have been there. Like, I think in every season of life, we have so much responsibility in our hands. Like, we have something we can do to bring purpose and work ethics into the world, right? And sometimes if we kind of get into that lazy atmosphere, we have weeks or days that we get into that, or years, where you just kind of, you know, you're focused on like leisure and like having fun, and you're just kind of like, you're not really taking responsibility for what you've been given. And I believe we all have been given life for a responsible, like for a purpose. So I just picture this guy like just hanging out in life and not really doing much and just kind of going about his business. And then I picture him, the boss comes back, right? The master, that's what it's called in the parable. He's the master and these are the servants. So the master comes back, the businessman, and he's like, hey, all right, I'm back, guys. And I imagine, so in the parable, the first guy comes back and he's like, hey, you gave me 5 bags. I doubled it and I have 5 more. And the master's like, oh my gosh, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. That's what he says. So I just picture, you know, like I picture the master at like a table and then the guys lined up just coming up to him. This is what I got for you now. And so the first guy, I picture him because he was working so hard at doubling what was given to him. I picture him kind of like really, I picture him really kind of like beat up, kind of like he's, you know, he's sweaty and he put in a lot of effort into what he was doing. And but he's tired, but and he's weary, but he's, you know, it's a good tired. It's like I did a good job on this, you know. And so that's why I kind of picture him, and kind of like his shirt's all kind of like messed up and dirty. And, you know, I don't picture him as like a, you know, all put together or anything. I just kind of picture him as like, man, you look at him and you're like, you worked hard, right? So that's why I picture him. And then the second guy, I kind of picture him a little bit less tethered or like messy, because he was given 2 golds or 2 talents. So I picture him kind of having worked hard too, but not as like crazy hard, but like he did what he could with his 2 talents. And that's it, you know, like he was given, you know, his 2 and he doubled it as well. And then, so the last guy, the lazy one that hid his talent, I kind of picture him as like a little bit cleaner and like cleaner than the first one and more put together and kind of like very proud and like, I still have my 1 talent that you gave me and I didn't lose it. and kind of excited, you know, to present it to the boss. And when he, the Bible says when he presents it to the boss responded and said, "You wicked and lazy servant." So you, so when he presented it to the boss initially, he said, "I knew that you are a hard man." And then this part goes into more of like that old language, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. And so the guy hid the gold, right? And then the master says, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seeds. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest." So in the parable, they took away the bag that was given to him, the one bag, and they gave it to the guy that had 10 bags. And then it says, "For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them." And then he said, "Throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness." And the main part that I want to focus on here is that he was not, the master was not proud of him when he said, "Well done, good and faithful servant." He wasn't proud of him. And I think it's because when you look back at what that servant probably did, he didn't do anything. He just hid it. He hid the responsibility. He hid the what he was privileged to have in the first place underground. And that's how I see kind of this perspective of going out of your norm to do something that can help a child in need. It's not normal for us to get involved in other people's business, especially kids who are like, I don't want to know. I just want to, you know, continue in my bubble of happy life and, you know, not really dive into the deeper world of, you know, abuse or neglect. It's something that I'm not created for. Like, I, you know, like, that's what we kind of sometimes say, like, "Oh, I'm not in social work," or that's what I picture that's being said, or, you know, "It's not my responsibility. I'm not someone's caretaker. I didn't give birth to this person. Like, who am I to be responsible for them?" But this parable really shows that God rewards those who kind of go a little deeper and further and multiply their gifts, multiply what's been given to them. And that takes work. It's not like it's going to be easy sometimes. And understanding what a child might be going through, there's something called secondary trauma, which probably doesn't help my case at any by explaining this, but secondary trauma is when you're exposed to something, just like, you know, whether it's listening or seeing it, you're that exposure to trauma from someone else, like what someone else is going through, has an effect on you emotionally, a wariness that gets in you emotionally, because, you know, as humans we empathize with people, right? We're normally so that secondary trauma is real. It's something that's real, and I think it stops people sometimes from being more purposeful in their life with what they can give. Like, I feel like it might stop someone from actually going out of their way to do more. And I want to encourage you, don't shut this podcast off. I want to encourage you to just be open to having harder conversations, because it's not, at the end of the day, it's not about you per se. It's about what's going to be this child's future. It's going to be about what's best for this child. And in the last episodes, we talked about how foster kids normally have failed adults in their life. So it's the adults in their life have failed them. And a lot of those foster kids are in school sometimes. And I mean, most of the time. And we just don't want to fail the children. I believe with information, you can make a difference. And you don't have to do it by yourself. I'm not calling you to be a hero and go in and change, you know, take in a child that's not yours, you know, like there's so much you can do. But I think it's important to realize that you're a part of a system, right? Like there's social workers on campus, there's the principal, and hopefully you have an administration that's supportive of the work of supporting children. But build your community where you are, where your teacher, as a teacher in your school, talk to other teachers about their students, and maybe talk to them about this human trafficking thing. Talk to them about the red flags that we're going to be talking about and even more in the next episode. Discuss what you would do if a situation comes up with human trafficking. If someone mentions something and you're like, oh, I think this person might need some help, what's the protocol, you know? And have that conversation, open it up to your associates, because we're not in this fight against trafficking alone. We're here, we're empowered as individuals to use our freedom to collectively make a difference, because we're stronger together. So don't, I just, you know, feel empowered to have conversations with your students, to be wise in your conversation, to be gentle and appropriate, but also like be proactive in being trained on how to one, have these conversations, but two, like what to do if you believe someone might be being trafficked. So this was just a short, or kind of short, long intro to the topic, but I want to encourage teachers out here that you guys are doing already so much, and I believe that you have the opportunity to be doing even a greater amount of work if you have the knowledge in regards to human trafficking. To be able to pinpoint like students in your classroom that might be disruptive, but there might be more things going on. That student might just need a little bit more attention, a little bit more direction, and a little bit more trust from their adults in their life. And you are one of those adults in their life. I believe that they are like a treasure possession that God gives us, has given you. And you can be a steward of that, and it's so empowering to think that way, because you know, you're not perfect, no one's perfect, no one's gonna do everything perfect, but the more empowered, the more knowledge we have, the more skills we have to be able to be empathetic to others, to be able to be more intentional in our conversations, especially with difficult students, the more we can make an impact against human trafficking in this world. So stay tuned for more, and thank you so much if you made it this far in this conversation. I know this was a tough one, and I hope you don't feel like I was, you know, I'm just really here to encourage, but also to galvanize you. Like, this is the time to rise up for your people, for your kids, because they're relying on the world to be good to them, and some of these kids are not receiving that at home or from the spaces where they find themselves. They are receiving a ton of other things that kids shouldn't ever be exposed to. So take the time to pray, and I hope the rest of your day goes very well. Please email me or connect with me on Instagram at Gallery Store. If you have any feedback or comments, I would love to hear what you have to say and your thoughts on this. So have a great day, and farewell. I'll talk to you later. Bye.